like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animal, talking animal, talking animal. Must be an animal. Come hear the animals. Talking animals. Talking animals.
Good morning. This is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and my guest today is Barbara Trask-Lovett, the president of Save Nosy Now, an organization that helped a high-profile, long-suffering circus elephant, that would be Nosy, win freedom from the neglectful, exploitive treatment of her owner. Currently, Save Nosy Now seeks to educate the public about the plight of captive elephants, pursue elephant-related litigation, and other procedures that might lead to a zoo or circus elephant being relocated to a sanctuary. We'll hear about how Save Nosy Now came to be, the current status of Nosy herself, other elephants they're particularly focused on helping at the moment, and more when I speak with Barbara Trask-Lovett in a few moments here on Talking Animals. Later in the show, I'll speak with Karen Rayalds, Chief Development Officer for the Humane Society of Tampa Bay, about the organization's fundraising campaign to build a much larger new facility launched by a major gift from the DiBartolo family. Also as the prize for Name That Animal Tune later on, I'll offer tickets to see The Alarm August 14th at the Capitol Theater. Right now, though, let's get to Barbara with the reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj@wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. This is Barbara Trask-Lovett on Talking Animals. Good morning, Barbara.
Good morning, Duncan. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thanks for joining us today on Talking Animals. And I kind of have a hunch that one way to look at your life would be sort of divided into the Nosy period and the pre-Nosy period. How does that assessment strike you?
Yeah, I think that's probably true. Nosy has kind of taken over my life for sure. I came from the orca world, actually, with the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society. I was very involved in doing a lot of work for them, creating awareness of dolphins and orcas and other cetaceans in captivity, particularly at SeaWorld and Miami Seaquarium and at some of the larger aquariums around the country. So, yeah, I mean, I've come from the captivity industry and then decided that, there probably was more to do in other areas. And a friend of mine told me about Nosy, and she just struck my heart. So definitely before Nosy and after Nosy, she has taken over my life.
Let's get even just a little bit more context for your work leading Save Nosy Now. So in addition to the work on behalf of Sea Shepherd and the dolphins and orcas, et cetera, that you mentioned, be curious to know a little bit about, I guess, what role really animals played in your life growing up. Did you grow up with animals? Were they a sort of important part of the family? How did that work?
Well, I grew up with lots of dogs and cats. My family was very much into having lots of pets around. I grew up on a farm, so I also had pet calves and pet chickens and pigs.
Oh, wow.
I loved them all so much. I named them all. I would spend lots and lots of time with them on my grandfather's farm. And
where was this, Barbara?
In Maine.
Oh, okay.
In mid-Maine near Bangor. And grew up there and really had a real appreciation for what the animals did to serve not only us but for themselves. And I took a real love for them into the future and have always had animals in my life.
That sounds like that was kind of in your formative years. So as you hit adulthood, how did animals work then? Did you then also live with animals? And then at what point did some of the activism kick in that led to presumably the Sea Shepherd work and beyond?
Well, I've always had cats. I've always loved cats. They're very important to me. I had up to four at one time. I believe in rescue. I believe in trap, neuter, and release. I've always been very involved in the local shelter here in my hometown, and I hope to continue doing that. As far as work for activism, I wish I could say that it had was easy and it came early in my life, but unfortunately it came later in my life. I devoted my life to my children and my pet and my family, and when they grew up and I started having grandchildren, I started seeing a bigger picture of what it really meant to be an activist and what it meant for the animals in our world. So that's when I kind of took off with this. I got involved in 2009 with Sea Shepherd, and basically through Facebook and through the show Whale Wars. Contacted Paul Watson. He's a good friend, and we've been working very hard together over the years to try to get the captive orcas out of their captivity and into sea pens and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So it came late in life, I would say, Duncan.
Yeah. Sometimes it's the experience that you accumulate in work, raising a family, and other things that you can bring to bear whenever you get into activism, and that sometimes actually make you more effective than maybe if you'd gotten in earlier without some of those experiences and learning things and skills that you can bring from others.
I agree. I think so, that once you grow up, you know, in this world and you realize what's really going on in the animal kingdom and what's going on in the environment, you become more aware and more educated. And I was very interested always in conservation and those kinds of activities to make sure that our world was a good place for us to be leaving our children and grandchildren. And I think that that's where my basic love comes from, is finding ways to make not only the animal lives better, but also human lives better in this crazy world that we live in.
Well, one other thing that sounded sort of like it might be a telling detail before we dive further into Nosy, back to Sea Shepherd for one sec. Now, you'd watched Whale Wars and I guess got involved generally with the organization, but it sounded like pretty quickly, there was a relationship forged with Captain Watson. So was that just the evolution of volunteering with the thing, or did you sort of specifically reach out to him directly to try to help more directly with his efforts?
Well, I would think it was probably a little of both. I mean, I was very involved in the local chapter here in the Boston area for Sea Shepherd. We got very involved in doing protests every year and staying on top of what was going on in the larger aquariums around the country. We took a great interest, my husband and I both took a great interest in what Paul was doing with Whale Wars and what was happening down in the Antarctic Ocean with the Japanese whalers killing all the whales. I think it was an evolutionary process. We got a chance to meet Paul Watson in Bath, Maine, at a Marine Maritime Exposium that he did there. And it was a wonderful experience, not only to hear him and talk with him personally and get to know him a little bit better, but also to kind of meld our minds into this whole arena of conservation, not only here in New England, where I happen to live, but also all around the world. I think it made a big difference in the conservation efforts that we were trying to put forth.
I guess what kind of struck me when you were a moment ago describing the situation with Paul Watson is that Sea Shepherd's been around a long time. There's been, I think it's safe to say, hundreds, maybe thousands of volunteers over the year. So the fact that he had become, sounds like a pretty good friend of yours, I guess kind of spoke to, I think, the kind of involvement that you had, and also maybe what we were discussing a moment ago, that maybe coming to some of this work later in life, bringing wealth of life experience, raising kids, working some other industry or field, just probably made that more distinctive, because I don't know that most people that are involved with Sea Shepherd end up with that kind of relationship with Paul Watson, so it just seemed kind of notable in that way.
Yeah, that's probably true. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people have met Paul, but it was a wonderful experience, I know, for us to finally, you know, talk with a man personally, although we had talked with him through Facebook, through Messenger, through emails, you know, that kind of thing to kind of meld together with our conservation efforts. But to actually, you know, see him in person, to actually sit down with him, you know, take a meal. And it was just a fantastic experience.
Well, I also have a sense that he might have recognized that you were going to, one way or another, go on to become sort of what you've become in the Nosy realm, because I think he probably recognized that you were very committed and had a lot of sort of talent and experiences to make a change.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I hope he saw that in us.
Yeah. So, okay, so more specifically, when did you first hear about Nosy yourself?
Well, I heard about Nosy around 2010. I had a friend who lived in Florida, who still lives in Florida in the Miami area, who was part of an organization called Save All Elephants on Facebook. And it's a very large Facebook group that kind of promotes saving elephants all over the world. And she started talking with me about this little elephant named Nosy, who lived in Florida. And I started doing a little more research about Nosy. She sent me all kinds of articles and things that had been written. The organization PETA and Compassion Works International had worked on Nosy's case for a few years prior to me getting involved. And she and I decided that it was time to start doing some action for Nosy. So we developed this thing called a call-in action to the USDA. And as many of your listeners probably know, the USDA is the department that is enforcing the Animal Welfare Act, or not enforcing, as the case may be.
Supposed to be,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, supposed to be. That's the whole point. So we've been trying to go after them for years to actually not only enforce the Animal Welfare Act, but to take action when needed for these elephants that are in dire straits. I had some experience working against the USDA for their non-enforcement action with the orcas.
Mm-hmm.
But this was a different kind of realm because the elephants are, there are so many of them in the United States in circuses and zoos. And to get down to brass tacks with Nosy, one particular elephant family that owns her or owned her at the time, you know, they just were bringing up citations and violations, you know, in the hundreds, and it was just time to do something. So we did this call-in action for the USDA to try to get them to, you know, do something, get off their butts and do something.
And in this case, to get something was to intervene with the people or person that owned Nosy at the time, or what was the action designed to accomplish?
The action was designed to accomplish some kind of confiscation of Nosy.
Okay.
Because of all the violations, at that time there were almost 200 citations against this particular family for their treatment of Nosy, and over 30 direct violations. The family had also been charged with a $7,500 fine at the time for actions against the Animal Welfare Act, and we were trying to pursue a little bit further and make them do some confiscation of the elephant and get her into a reputable sanctuary in this country.
What was the response to the call-in action there at the USDA?
Well, as you can guess, nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we tried. We did our best. We had all of our constituents really going after the USDA. They did call-ins. They did emails. We had large tweet sheets that we did. We did everything that we could in our power at the time to raise some awareness and make the USDA stand up and take notice. That obviously didn't make a dent. A lot of the actions that we did after that didn't make a dent. But we continued on and decided that we would devise a group page on Facebook called Save Nosy Now. And so that's kind of where that all came from, was that original call-in action to the USDA. And once we had Save Nosy Now established, we started creating a membership, because we decided to make it a closed group so that we could discuss and maintain actions that we wanted to do without getting involved with the circus or zoo people who have a very different mindset. So we decided to continue on with Save Nosy Now, and we did so many actions, and we marched on the USDA in 2015 in Washington, D.C., and we've had a Nosy Summit since then with very reputable groups attending. We did everything in our power to get Nosy out of the clutches of this family.
And Barbara, I mean, we've talked about the USDA, not surprisingly, over the years on this show. In this case, was your feeling that the inaction by the USDA, even with the various attempts, including the call-in action and the march, et cetera, is your feeling that they are just so overwhelmed and sort of understaffed, or is there something more nefarious at work?
Well, you know, I used to think along those lines, Duncan. I used to think that it was just that they were overworked, they didn't have enough inspectors. Obviously, they do not. That is a fact. have enough inspectors to go out and actually see what's going on a day-to-day basis, especially with these circus groups that go out and do circuses every day and have elephant rides available. And it's impossible for an inspector to get to every single thing that's going on. However, with all the citations and all the direct violations racking up for Nosy and her family, the family that was owning her, it just seemed to me to be such a nefarious situation. Mm-hmm. So my feeling today in the current environment is that the USDA has completely locked down. They are not allowing Freedom of Information Act requests. They're blacked out all of their records in regards to all the all these circuses and zoos and owners of puppy mills and everything else. They've just blacked it all out. Can't see what's going on out there. We're not seeing the violations. We're not seeing the citations. And they're saying it's because they don't want to embarrass the owners of these places. That's ridiculous, of course. We know that's ridiculous. So it's just a really hard thing to fight against when you've got an administration in office that is, you know, turning everything upside down in the animal world, going against all the environmental things that we've put in place to try to save the animals and keep the endangered species list going. They're even trying to turn that over. So it's a mixture of a bunch of different things going on, so much political wagginess in the background.
And obviously the period spanning the efforts that you've described do span a number of years, but I mean, it sounds like from some references you made that you feel like it's gotten more pronounced in the wake of the Trump presidency and administration.
Oh, most definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, he's turning things on his head, and it's unfortunate for the animals. We're seeing, you know, him turning over things such as being able to shoot bear cubs and wolf cubs in their dens in Alaska, and killing all the iconic horses out on the ranges and killing the buffalo, and just so that the cattle industry can continue and get more land to graze their cattle. I mean, the political stuff going on just blows my mind every single day, as I'm sure it does a lot of your listeners. I wake up in fear almost every day and worried that something else is going to hit the fan, and I'm just really devastated about what's going on with the Endangered Species Act, because Nosy is an African elephant and her species is becoming more endangered every day. They're dying in Africa because of the poaching crisis for their tusks and the human-elephant conflict that's going on, and their habitat is just being decimated by people. So, we've got a lot of issues.
For sure. Well, I mean, there could be a show or several shows just devoted to all the shifts that have happened since the Trump administration took over, and just even in the last day or two, as you kind of allude to. So, but we want to bring it back to Nosy. Let me just first let people know, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. If you just tuned in, my guest is Barbara Trask-Lovett, president of Save Nosy Now, which seeks to educate the public about the plight of captive elephants and pursues various means like legislation, litigation, other measures to help improve that plight, and also that might result in an elephant specifically being relocated to a sanctuary, as Nosy at least temporarily has done. We'll hear more about that in a moment. If you'd like to ask Barbara a question or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663, email dj@wmnf.org, or text 813-433-0885. So, Barbara, I've been doing this show for 15 years, talked to a lot of people who care deeply about animals. Still, I was struck for years at how often I heard from people who are concerned about Nosy, worried about Nosy, wanted to help Nosy, wanted me to help Nosy. And all these people were different. It wasn't like the same person calling over and over, emailing over and over. Sadly, there's no shortage of solitary elephants living on the road or at roadside attractions or crummy lives in one way or another. But why do you think Nosy has affected people so profoundly? And obviously, you're one of those that was affected.
Well, I think one of the biggest factors, and this may sound kind of silly, but I think one of the biggest factors is that she's just a sweet, cute, fuzzy-wuzzy little elephant.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she's one of the smaller forest elephants from Africa. She was taken from her home in Zimbabwe when she was only 2 years old, brought here to live a life of drudgery and monotony and brutality every single day until she was 35 years old. So I think that it's just that emotional connection that you have if you have any sense of empathy or compassion for another being. You see the videos of her performing or giving rides. You see her stumbling because of her severe arthritis. You see her sweet face, so sad looking in a lot of the videos when she was performing in the circus, and the things that she was forced to do because of the fear of the bullhook and the iron rod against her. I just think it's an emotional connection. She's alone. She's a female. She should be with other female elephants in her herd, with her mother, with her grandmother, with her aunts and cousins and sisters. She was just an emotionally charged being, and I think that's what brought people to Nosy.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about her status. First of all, I did post this morning, and it's certainly not the first time at all that that picture or something like it has been posted. But anyways, she is, at the moment at least, at the Elephant Sanctuary in Tennessee. Tell us more about what that means, how solid that status is, and some of the legal and issues and cases kind of swirling around this.
Sure. Well, of course, as you know, we tried very hard for years to get her to sanctuary. We did everything in our power with the USDA, with the Florida Wildlife Commission, with venues where she was, with state and local officials in every state that she was transported to in her rusty, rundown trailer. And everything kind of collided in Alabama, in Moulton, Alabama, in November of 2017, when we were contacted through our Facebook page by a young lady in Moulton who had seen her beside the road standing in her own feces, chained by 2 feet, without water and without food. And her owner had asked this young woman to buy hay for her, which she gladly did because she had empathy and compassion for the elephant. She contacted us through our Facebook page. We told her to contact the local animal control officer, which is what we've always told local activists to do. She did that. The animal control officer went out, found her, in the situation that she was in, as I said, standing in her own feces without water and food, and confiscated her. She got a court order that took her temporarily to the elephant sanctuary, which was only about an hour away. So they transported her that very night to the elephant sanctuary, and she has been there since November 2017. In the interim, the judge in Alabama, there was a huge hearing, and she finally ruled in January of this year that Nosy would be in the custody of the animal control officer of Moulton, Alabama, and she would remain in custody at the elephant sanctuary. The Liebel family, who owns Nosy, appeals that decision, and it is it was sent up to the circuit court level, and now it is going to be the judge at the circuit court level decided to do a mediation. So there's mediation going on, which has to end in September. Once that mediation is done, if there is no decision or mediation decision from those meetings, then Nosy still remains at the sanctuary until a hearing, a bench trial, sometime next year.
Meanwhile, she is at the elephant sanctuary, but it sounds like the custody is not considered, I mean, it's still pending while this mediation has to be completed.
That's right. The custody is still pending. We obviously are trying everything in our power, which is very little at this point because it's in the hands of the circuit court judge in Alabama to decide in the end what actually happens. We doubt very much, but we never know what's going on in the mediation sessions, that anything will transpire from those sessions. How do you do custody and mediation? It's not quite the same as custody of a child. because this is an elephant, and elephant is considered property. So it's a different kind of a mindset, I believe.
But I'm curious, though, would, in a different way, the very reports and information that the USDA had access to take action on, but surely there are documents that indicate what happened over the years at the hands of the folks that own Nosy. Wouldn't that come into play in terms of either a mediation or whatever legal decision needs to be made?
Yes. Anything that has been done prior is always applicable in the courtroom, and the prosecuting attorneys on this case would have all of that information, as well as all of Nosy's medical information, which came in a 50-page document from the elephant sanctuary once she was there. They discovered that she had severe osteoarthritis. She has a severe skin condition called keratosis, where the skin builds up, and she's developed a bacterial infection that will take many, many years, if ever, to get over. She had a severe urinary tract infection that had been ongoing for quite some time, and other medical problems. So this 50-page medical document is going to count for a lot. A 400-page complaint about Nosy and everything that she had been through in all the years that she had been with the Liebel family was submitted to the USDA by Save Nosy Now just a few months ago, and they have yet to rule on any of that. If we ever hear anything, we'd be surprised at this point. But we do have all that documentation. The court has all that documentation, and we're hoping that they will have the compassion and empathy for Nosy that all of we have. We're going to keep her in sanctuary.
Yeah, I mean, granted, I am pretty passionately pro-elephant, but just as you were sort of rattling off the things, even leaving aside maybe even the 400-page complaint, although that would seem significant too, but the 50-page medical document, I mean, it would seem like whether you're a mediator or a judge or whoever, presented with that kind of stuff and the history that suggests, just seems to be hard that you would rule that, say, okay, well, this all seems great and the elephant's having a good life and being well treated, so let's continue as is.
You would think so, yes.
Yeah,
I mean, that would be the logical conclusion for all of us. But who knows what goes on in the minds of people in Alabama or anywhere else. I mean, look at this current administration that we have in the White House. I mean, it could turn in an instant.
Right.
We're hopeful. We're very hopeful because the medical is the science, and we believe in the science where we're going to keep going.
Well, and also the slightly positive thing amongst all this is that while this is dragging on, at least she's at the elephant sanctuary in the meantime rather than some other weird sort of interim spot or whatever. I mean, she's getting great care, and again, she looks so much better, and I would presume at least is doing so much better just by being there in the meantime. So,
yeah, the sanctuary is doing a wonderful job at making sure that she's well taken care of. The videos and pictures that we've seen, and some personal contact that we've had with some members at the sanctuary, it's just been wonderful to hear how well she is doing, that her skin condition is starting to look so much better. She's gained hundreds of pounds because she was very thin when she arrived. She's eating and drinking well. She's being able to get the medication that she needs for the arthritis and the skin condition and the urinary tract infection that she had that was chronic. She's being well taken care of. We're happy to see her out foraging in the forest, knocking down trees and playing in the mud wallows and, playing in the water. It's just wonderful to finally see her have the ability to make her own choices.
Yeah. Is she still, at this point, quarantined, Barbara?
As far as we know, she is.
Okay.
Yes. We understand that she can see and, of course, she can hear the other elephants.
Yeah.
There are a few other elephants there at the sanctuary who are African, so we expect that they are communicating with each other, and she is able to see them at certain levels, but she has not been introduced until the custody battle is taken care of and she's there permanently. I think the sanctuary is just trying to do everything in their power to make sure that everything is done in the correct and proper way.
By the book, yeah, for sure. So before we move on to other topics and other elephants, is there anything the public, folks listening to the show, for example, can do to influence at all the outcome of the mediation or what might happen after that in any way?
Well, there's really nothing that we can do at this point.
Okay. No,
like I said, it's in the hands of the prosecuting attorneys in Moulton, Alabama, and they are, believe me, it's in good hands.
Okay,
we are very
confident
in them. Yes.
Okay, good. Well, again, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest is Barbara Trash Lovett, president of Save Nosy Now. We're discussing captive elephants, including the one who gave the organization its name, Nosy. We invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj@wmnf.org or texting 813-433-0885. So yeah, one of our emailers asked about trial information and dates, court dates, okay. So we kind of got into that. But okay, so Nosy, for now, is in a good place, figuratively and literally. So what issues, and maybe more to the point, what elephants are kind of the focus now for the organization?
Well, the elephant that we kind of moved to right after Nosy was confiscated, and we knew that she was going to be at the sanctuary for some time, is Asha. And Asha is another female African elephant living alone. She's at the Natural Bridge Zoo in Virginia. And we just felt a real affinity to her because her story is similar to Nosy's in that she was taken from her home at a very young age and has been there for a few decades. She is giving elephant rides in the summer in this heat in Virginia on a regular basis. She has access to very little water and shade during those time periods, and we're very concerned about her health, like we are and have been with Nosy. So her situation, because it was so similar, just kind of melded into our interest in her. We also are looking at the Carson and Barnes elephants, particularly Viola and Issa, who are taken around from one place to another and providing circus shows and elephant rides all over the country. Carson and Barnes is a very large organization, and they provide elephants, lease out elephants to various circuses all over the country to do the circus shows. We're also very interested, of course, in all captive elephants, so we are working very hard to come up with new strategies, trying to throw everything against the wall to see what sticks in various locales, various states, to see what we can do about getting them to sanctuary.
And go ahead. No, I was just going to say, speaking of strategies, I'd be curious to know what Save Nosy Now has found might be the difference in approaching, say, an elephant that's in a zoo, like Asha, the kind of the current focus, as opposed to a circus elephant, whether it's a sole solitary circus elephant like Nosy had been or others like that. I mean, are there indeed different strategies or things that need to be emphasized in those efforts?
Well, I think the difference is that because they're in one location, I mean, Asha's going to be in Virginia, she's not going to be taken from state to state. So we really have to push hard at the Department of Inland Fisheries and Game at the state level in Virginia. We have to push very hard at that level. We also try to push hard at the local level with the local animal control officers. We push hard on the family that owns Asha. We're doing everything in our power to create as much a legality, a litigation possibilities with Asha. We're working on some large actions for later in the fall at the Natural Bridge Zoo. We're working on litigation and legislation in the state of Virginia, trying to get some interest amongst the legislators there to enact some laws that will provide better situations for any elephants in the state coming in from circuses or living there in zoos. So yes, the focus is a little different. We're not going state to state like we did with Nosy. We're not, you know, going after particular venues except for this one where Asha lives. So our focus is a little different. Same thing is happening with Viola and Issa with the Carson and Barnes Circus. We're able to follow them from state to state, and we've just started some actions with them. We do have a very huge project coming up that is going to expose a lot of the government agency obstacles on both state and local levels that keep captive animals in abusive situations that create risks to the animals. And we are going to be looking for large donations to make this come to fruition. It's going to be announced on World Elephant Day which is August 12th of this year. So make sure that your viewers stay tuned to Save Nosy Now and our new newsletter that is going to be coming out on August 12th for news about this large project that we're working on.
And along those lines, we should note that in addition to the Facebook presence, there is a website that's simply savenosynow.org, which can also kind of send you to
Facebook pages as well.
So in terms of litigation, geez, often we find in matters of animal welfare, the laws are toothless if they exist at all, and or there is weak enforcement, and again, sometimes sporadic, little to none. So have you found that, I mean, I guess like in the situation with Asha, that if you just try to focus on a particular state in this instance, and what kind of help have you gotten from politicians there in terms of trying to buck up some serious legislation?
Well, we actually have a couple of people on our side there, a couple of state reps who are interested in the whole idea of stopping animal circuses from coming in or banning the bullhook. Those kinds of legislations are very important as starting measures to get moving.
Yeah.
We're also working on a federal level to get a larger legislation passed that would prevent circus animals or zoo elephants from being in the situation that they're in or making their lives better. It's called TEEPSPA, Traveling Exotic Animal Protection Act, and we have a lot of sponsors for that.
Great.
So we're working very hard along with other groups to make sure that these kinds of legislations are passed to make their lives better.
That's great. Yeah, that's where it really seems like fundamentally can shift the whole landscape. And you've got great help there, at least in some state level. But this federal legislation sounds tremendous. So let me get a caller involved and read an email. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Barbara Trask Lovett.
Hi, this is Rebecca from Safety Harbor. I had a question.
Okay.
There was a change.org had a petition this week about an elephant, and I'm driving in my car, else I would have pulled up the email and gotten the name of the elephant. And I was just wondering if your guest had heard about that elephant, that there's a change.org petition that just got started.
There are so many petitions. I don't know which one you might be talking about. There are so many elephants out there in the world that people are doing petitions for. So I don't know which one you're referring to.
Well, Duncan, when I get to my back to my desk, I'll forward the email to change.org, and maybe you can forward it on to that.
Sure.
Of course.
Absolutely.
Be happy to.
That'd be great. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you so much. Thanks, Rebecca.
Thank you.
Okay. So we just have a moment or two left, Barbara, but before we get into anything else, I'm thinking about the interview last night and sort of figuring out some points that I hope we could touch on. As I was in the midst of doing that, I got word that Anna Louise had passed away, and it just feels like in the midst of this conversation, maybe we should at least briefly address or even honor her by some discussion.
I'm really glad you brought her up. I was hoping that we'd be able to talk about her for just a moment because she lived 30 years all alone. She was in a very similar situation to Nosy, being dragged around the country to do circuses and give elephant rides. She's been all over the place, and unfortunately, she has passed away. We received word yesterday from PETA that in spite of all the complaints and the violations, that she was left at this Two Tails Ranch in Florida, which, by the way, is no sanctuary. It is a place where they use the elephants to paint and to give rides and to interact with the people. Anna Louise was all alone, just like Nosy, and she had some difficulties in the last few months, was taken off the road about 8 months ago. We didn't know why at the time, but she was only in her mid to late 30s and has now passed.
Yeah.
It's a very sad situation. It could very well have happened to Nosy if she had been left with a legal family, because she was in such bad medical condition. She would have died. She would have died. We know that now after reading this 50-page medical report that she would not have been able to manage living. So I think that this story of Anna Louise is poignant and it's timely, only because there are so many elephants just like her out there that we're fighting for.
Yeah, and I guess in the face of reasons not to be, I'm still kind of try to be the eternal optimist, and that's why I meant, too, about with that medical report about Nosy, not necessarily tied to the sad passing of Ana Luise, but it just seems like it'd be hard to ignore document after document after document of medical conditions that are significant and potentially fatal for an elephant, where you'd say, okay, well, yeah, this seems okay to us. Let's continue to have her live with these people. So anyway, we have just about a minute left, Barbara. One thing I was kind of curious about, and I got an emailer that sort of had a parallel question. I don't know if we're going to have time for all this, but I was just curious. Ringling pulled its elephants from its circus units in May of 2016 and then folded the whole shebang a year later. What changes, positive and or negative, have there been, do you think, for circus elephants and some of the Save Nosy Now efforts since that fairly significant development of Ringling saying, okay, we're done here?
Well, this made a significant difference. We all went hurrah when that happened, obviously.
Of course.
The elephants are still being held in Florida under terrible conditions, and we wish they would get out. But it definitely has changed the whole realm of the circus. Knowing that that the Ringling had closed down, that meant that a lot of people were not going to the circus anymore. The attendance is down significantly at circuses throughout the country.
Yeah.
And that's a wonderful thing for us. That is going to see a major change, and because the revenue is not there, they're not going to be able to maintain. Many other of the smaller circuses have closed down since then, and we're working on these larger ones like Carson and Barnes to close down. So I think it's made a significant difference in the number of elephants that can be used in circuses.
Okay, well, that's a nice note, a hopeful note, so that might be just the right place to leave it. We've been speaking with Barbara Trask Lovett from Save Nosy Now. Again, the website is savenosynow.org. They are on Facebook. It is a closed group, so if you're interested in involved and you're an elephant person, whatever, I think you can sort of send a note or be considered, and then you have to be approved, I guess, for membership for that group. But
we do have another page called Save Nosy Now, Inc., which is our nonprofit group.
Okay.
So they can come to that page, and that is a public page, and they can find out the same information there.
Great. Okay, so there's any number of ways to get information on Nosy herself, but also what Nosy is coming to represent, which is trying to help all kinds of captive elephants and all kinds of realms. So, Barbara, thank you so much for making the time to join us on Talking Animals and all your great work on behalf of all these elephants.
Thanks so much for having me, Duncan. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye-bye. In a few moments, I'll speak with Karen Rayals about the Humane Society of Tampa Bay's fundraising campaign to build a large new facility. Right now, though, it's time to step into the Comedy Corner. We're reaching into the vaults for a longtime Talking Animals favorite, Brian Regan, and a piece that's one of our faves, too. This is Brian Regan with a piece called Flipper and Gentle Ben in today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals.
I watched a lot of Flipper growing up. Flipper, he was something. Always saving people. Every show he'd go save some more. I save some people! For that, they would throw him a dead fish. Hey, thanks! Thanks for saving people. He was always doing that backwards dance, three quarters out of the water. Man, that was cool. Imagine if you could do that? That'd impress some people at the public pool, you know? Just go, hey, how y'all doing? Just skip across the top of the pool without getting your bathing suit wet and hop up on the other side. Hey, what's happening? And just grab a little towel, wipe off your feet. Yeah, it's a little colder than I thought. Wow, who's that guy?
That was Brian Regan. We have the piece of a piece called Flipper and Gentle Ben, taken from his CD simply entitled Live. Now let's speak with Karen Rayals about those plans for the fabulous big new facility for the Humane Society of Tampa Bay. This is Karen Rayals on Talking Animals. Good morning, Karen.
Good morning to you.
Thanks for joining us on Talking Animals. So how did this whole new fabulous possibility of the new facility get started?
Well, for those who have been to the shelter in recent years, they know that our current facility has been aging for a while. We're over 100 years old, and we have been working on plans for a new shelter, 42,000 square feet, all air-conditioned, with isolation rooms for sick animals and nurseries for kittens and puppies. Those are things we don't currently have. We were fortunate to obtain a lead gift from the DiBartolo family, and that kicked off everything. And we're now down to the finish line, just about $2 million to raise, and that's why I appreciate the opportunity to talk to your audience today.
For sure. Well, I've seen, as I'm sure many people listening have, perhaps, the artist's rendering of the new facility, and just on an appearance level, it looks quite quite impressive. And then just some of the features you've described, the 42,000 square feet, air conditioning, et cetera. Are there other notable aspects about the new facility that you might want to mention as well in terms of helping our animal friends?
Well, you know, I think the biggest thing about the facility, as you said, it's gorgeous. Designed by Thomas Everett Lamb, who is a local designer, and he took this project on as a gift for us.
Nice.
And we're so excited to work with him because he's just brilliant. And as you can see from the design, this will be the first time that our staff will be contained in one contiguous building. So that's very exciting. The intake department, where all of our animals are vetted, will be on a lower floor with the shelter above that. And then we do have offices and an education center for children, because we provide a lot of children's programming, like Critter Camp and Paws for Literacy, our reading program.
Wow, well, this sounds really cool. And I guess fundamentally, too, although we've kind of, I guess, indirectly alluded to it, a significant part of this would be you would be able to help and serve significantly more animals with the new facility.
That is exactly right.
Yeah.
Right now, last year, we were able to find forever homes for 8,661 animals. With this new shelter, we'll be able to serve well over 10,000 animals.
Wow.
So that's an extra 2,000 animals that we can find homes for with this new facility. And that's really, you hit the nail on the head. That's the whole point of expanding our services and facilities so that we can do that.
Yeah. So, Karen, we don't have a whole much time left, but is there a timetable we should be mindful of, a ticking clock by which the money needs to be raised?
Good question.
Okay.
We hope to break ground during the first quarter of 2019, so time is going through the sand, through the hourglass. And if anybody would like to contact me at the Humane Society regarding a naming opportunity or a gift, be it large or small, we are anxious to talk to everyone who wants to be a part of this.
And would they go to the Humane Society Tampa.bay.org website, or is there a more specific either phone number or email that you want to give over the air, or what? How would you like
they,
to?
They can go to shelterthemtampa.com, or they can go right to our website, Humane Society Tampa. org, and on that main website of ours, you will see Shelter Them. That's the name of our campaign and
okay.
what we hope to do.
Great. So either way, that's the way to get to you and find
Absolutely.
Out or just help out. And if people don't, maybe can't quite swing something that would get them naming rights, if they could just put a, you know, reach in their wallet and put a few bucks in, that I'm sure you're quite open to that as well.
Everything is important to us.
For sure.
This shelter belongs to the community, so we want everyone who wants to be involved to get involved.
That's great. Okay, Karen, well, thank you so much. This sounds really exciting, and I can hardly wait to see the ground being broken and ultimately this gleaming, fantastic new facility. So thanks for joining us today on Talking Animals.
Oh, thanks for the opportunity, Duncan. Awesome. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Coming up at 11 on WNF, it's Rob Loray and Radioactivity, kicking off a three-hour block of interviews, phone calls, news, and more. Meanwhile, on this show is the prize for Name That Animal Tune. I'll be offering a pair of tickets to see The Alarm. Remember The Alarm? At the Capitol Theater. And that date is August 14th. So this is a giveaway, but please only participate if you haven't won something from WNF in the last 90 days. Again, a pair of tickets to see The Alarm at August 14th is at the Capitol Theater is the prize. To the first person who calls 813-239-9663, correctly identifies this animal song, a clue, quite apt song after the conversation we have with Barbara Trask Lovett. Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals. Oh, right, we'll take any guests that might guesses that might come in off the air, because we haven't reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. Rob Loria is up next with Radioactivity. Next week, my guest will be Bridget Watson, the president of Mission Reunite, an international nonprofit dedicated to missing pet prevention and recovery. This is Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa, Brandon, Largo, Weeki, Wachee, and beyond.